You know, Elizabeth and I co-host this podcast, but we also get to do a lot of other cool things for state parks, like fishing, birding, and hiking all over Arizona.
Yeah, we're a little spoiled, and we get to do all these cool things across Arizona, and then we actually try to share them as much as we can. So we put these incredible adventures onto lots of places, like, you know, our website, but we also put it on social media so that people can learn about all the fun things that there are to do and the places that you can go in Arizona.
Yeah, we love sharing pictures when people tag us in their state park adventures. So tag us anytime you go.
Exactly. Yeah, we share our own stuff and then we also share everybody else's adventures in our parks. So that's a lot of fun. And every time someone tags us, I get an alert. And then I get to see their adventure. And I remember a while back, a few months ago or something, I kept seeing these notifications from the same person over and over. And it was this person sharing incredible astrophotography.
Oh, yep. That's when people go out at night and get pictures of the stars and the Milky Way.
Yeah, with like big cameras. Like they do it seriously. It's not just like their iPhone on a night setting. They have equipment, they know what they're looking for, and they get these beautiful shots. And this person kept tagging us in their astrophotography shots in the state parks. And they were so beautiful and they really stuck with me. So fast forward a few months later and imagine my surprise when we're at work, we're working away, and we get this email pop up on our staff announcements asking us to welcome a new ranger to our park. And it's the same guy. It's the astrophotographer with the same name that I saw on social media.
Heck yeah, we got a good one.
I know. His name is Isaiah Ortiz, and now he works at Catalina State Park. But it turns out that Isaiah is obviously a big nature lover, and he is also part of a group called the Sonoran Insiders. And that group advocates for sharing and enjoying Arizona's landscapes. In fact, he even taught a class for Sonoran Insiders on his astrophotography. So he's really good.
I know, that's crazy. It's such a small world, but really it makes sense because of natural progression. You know, a lot of people fall in love with Arizona's beauty and the natural places here because we got a ton of them, and for some, the logical next step is to get involved and find ways to protect it.
Right. Yeah, that's exactly what Isaiah did. He, both in becoming an ambassador for the Sonoran Insider program that he's a part of and taught a class for, as well as by becoming a state park ranger at Catalina State Park. So we, of course, had to talk with him about this. We had to learn about what inspires him, both with his astrophotography and then to become a park ranger and to get involved in the Sonoran Insiders program.
Oh yeah, we invited Isaiah and some of his friends on the show to help us learn more about the Sonoran Insiders. And you know, that's who we're talking with on the show today. Isaiah plus two of the program organizers, Jenny Davis and Brooke Wheelock. And Jenny works for the National Forest Foundation as the Southern Rockies Program Associate. And Brooke is the Partnership Coordinator with the U.S. Forest Service on the Tonto National Forest.
Yeah, it was so interesting to talk with the three of them. I really enjoyed learning from Isaiah and Jenny and Brooke. It was a great conversation.
Oh, yeah, it was a lot of fun. I mean, we talked about the program, obviously, and we learned about some cool places and things.
Right? Like snails, by the way. What? I mean, I didn't see us talking about snails on this episode, but you never know what's going to happen.
Yeah. Snails, stars, social media, and coffee.
Coffee. We talked about coffee. Yeah. That's what you get when you have five people in a conversation. I think you just talk about a lot of things, but we had a great time.
Totally. So, well, enough about us talking about what we're going to talk about. Let's just dive into the show and learn about the Sonoran Insiders.
Sounds good. Okay, we're going to start our conversation today kind of with the beginning of how Sonoran Insiders began, but I love to first start with an introduction of each of you so our listeners know who we're talking with today. Maybe I'll go in alphabetical order since we have three guests today. That's a lot of guests. Jenny Davis, can you introduce yourself?
All right. Hi, I'm the Southern Rockies Program Associate for the National Forest Foundation. I get to work cross-regionally with the Southwest and Rocky Mountain regions and do a lot of strategic planning and organizational development, things that support our collaborative conservation efforts, and get to work on Sonoran Insiders.
And you'll see in our show notes, we've got bios for each one of our guests today. Jenny, you shared that you do some fun hobbies in your free time. One of them got me really excited. Jenny likes to do cyanotypes. Do you guys know what this is?
I don't even know if I've ever heard of that.
It's so cool. Jenny, can you explain?
Yeah, sure. So it's an old photographic process, and it's really the origins of blueprints. So if you've ever seen the prints that are like blue and white, they're getting more and more popular, but basically, you take two different types of chemicals, mix them together, coat paper, and then you expose it in UV. So you can take it outside in the sun and then rinse it in water. And it changes to a really pretty like Prussian blue color. So a lot of times it's been largely used with botanical art too. And there was a woman author that was one of the first recognized artists that did it too, which is pretty cool.
Well, after you explained it, I am familiar with that. I just didn't know what it was called. It's a very cool style for sure.
Yeah. They're beautiful. I want to cover my whole entire house with this artwork. They're just gorgeous.
Thank you.
Well, thanks for being with us today, Jenny. The next in our alphabetical list would be, I think, Isaiah. Isaiah Ortiz, can you introduce yourself?
Absolutely. Yeah. My name is Isaiah Ortiz. I'm a park ranger here at Catalina State Park, and I'm also a Sonoran Insider Ambassador. I've been doing that since 2019 and just really proud to be both a ranger and an ambassador. And yeah, that's me.
Isaiah, I got a question for you a little bit, kind of maybe about your background. I know that a lot of people we talk to and Elizabeth and I included, we're excited to share conservation and sustainability ideas with the public. And personally, I noticed there was a turning point in my life where I was like, you know what, more people need to know about this kind of stuff. So I'm going to actively pursue a career in that area. I was just wondering if there was a time in your life that defined that or kind of how you came about to be in this space.
Oh, wow. That's a great question. Yeah. I go back to my childhood. Like I've always really loved nature and wanted to protect it. And I spent a lot of time outside as a kid, thankfully. And, but as far as like protecting the parks, I go back to my first trip to Yosemite National Park in California. And I went like right after I graduated high school and was just completely blown away. Like we actually went to Tuolumne Meadows first. So for anybody who's familiar with Yosemite, it's not like the big, Tuolumne Meadows is like more low key and it's up in the high country. But I was just so blown away by that. And then when I went down to the canyon, I was like, wow, this is beautiful. Like I would love to be a ranger or something like that someday. And that was like a pivotal moment. That whole trip we were doing, we went through California and went to Big Sur and to some other places. And that got me into like the parks. And now I have like a National Park Geek sticker on my car. And I love to go around and see the different parks.
Core memory.
Yeah.
You'll never forget that trip. And I love how it was a catalyst for, you know, maybe the rest of your life.
Yeah. People, take your kids to the parks. You never know what fire you're going to light. Awesome. Well, thanks for being with us, Isaiah. Thanks for sharing your background. We're happy you bridge the Sonoran Insiders program and the state park. So you have a really cool, unique perspective. And then lastly with us as a guest today is Brooke Wheelock. Can you introduce yourself, Brooke?
Yeah, absolutely. Brooke Wheelock, I am the partnerships coordinator for the Tonto National Forest. I've been with the Forest Service for about 5 years, a little over 5 years now. So most of that time spent on the Tonto. Before that, I was with the National Park Service and U.S. Army Corps of Engineers as a park ranger as well.
Wow. What a breadth of experience. What do you like to do for fun, Brooke?
As you can tell by my setup, I do enjoy streaming video games in my free time.
Yeah. To paint a picture for the listeners, Brooke is the most professional looking one on this phone call. She's got like this big microphone in front of her. She looks like a podcasting pro.
She might even be the most comfortable judging by that chair.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, definitely. Definitely comfy. Lots of hours.
That explains it. Okay. So you like to game in your free time. You know, that makes sense. I'm sure you're outdoors a lot for your job. Mm-hmm. It might be nice to have like an activity or a hobby that you can do in the cool AC.
Yeah. I like to split my time. Yeah. Cause it does get really hot here. And there's only so much you can do in the water and in the summer here. So yeah, I like to have my split hobbies for the different seasons, but yeah.
Awesome. Well, thanks for joining us today. We're all together, of course, to discuss this program, the Sonoran Insiders. And I do want to back up to how this got started, but I think we better begin by defining what this program actually is. So who wants to tell us in just a quick overview, what is the Sonoran Insiders program?
Yeah, I could talk about that, Brooke, if you want to go into the history. So the Sonoran Insiders program is this collaborative effort between social media ambassadors in Arizona and professional partners. We really want to promote and amplify good stewardship and responsible recreation, responsible outdoor recreation in the Sonoran Desert and landscapes across the state. We have community members with a wide following on social media, and they amplify these efforts of local conservation organizations, nonprofits, and agencies as well. And Sonoran Insiders partners, again, like Brooke and I here with the Forest Service and NFF and our other great partners, we host these fun and really informative experiences. We call them insider experiences for program ambassadors that increase the knowledge and raise awareness of local conservation efforts and recreation, again, responsible recreation topics. And then the ambassadors then share what they've learned during these experiences on their social media channels, amplifying that messaging.
That's awesome. Seems like your program's almost an answer to like the social media influencers, and people who love the outdoors are generally a little concerned about, you know, beautiful places going up on social media because they can fall to overuse. So it's almost like this program is like the answer for that issue.
Also, I kind of want to add to that a little bit, just from what I've noticed from the outside looking in at all the different insiders pages. First of all, it helps that most of them are really good photographers, so it makes awesome content. But I like how they all take a little bit different approach to reaching people, and I think that's a really good method to do what you're doing, trying to reach as many different people as possible. So just something I noticed on the outside looking in, that I think that's a really cool setup, how there's just the diversity of, topics and stuff on the insiders pages.
Yeah, it's really cool to see. And I'm going to brag on Isaiah for a minute, because Isaiah does nice guy photography and actually has a book that's going to be out soon.
Plug the book, Isaiah. Let's hear it. What's it called?
All right. I'll go ahead and say it. Yeah, I have a book coming out on July 1st called Starry Sky Adventures Arizona. And it's a Falcon field guide. So I was fortunate enough to write for Falcon and to do 50 trips around the state, just going to different dark sky areas, whether it's international dark sky parks like the Grand Canyon or places that aren't like recognized officially, but have incredible dark skies like the White Mountains and, down in like, southeastern Arizona by the Chiricahuas, like Cave Creek Canyon. So that was all over the state. And so I worked on that mostly last year, and very proud of it, very happy about it. And yeah, night sky photography is my specialty, mostly wide angle astrophotography with a camera and a tripod. I don't do like too much of like deep sky galaxies or anything like that, but anyways, I digress. That's what it's
about. No, you don't digress. That's amazing.
You were able to do that in 1 year. You're like, I did it most of last year. You know, it takes people usually a little bit longer to write a book.
Awesome. Yeah, it was, I did. Yeah, it was a very aggressive schedule. Yeah, signed the contract in like August of 2021 and with a deadline of September of 2022.
And no big deal. So, yeah. No pressure. No pressure. No big deal. Yeah. Not aggressive at all.
You know, it was good because I'm a procrastinator. So it was the perfect fire to light under me to keep me going and keep it moving to strike while the iron was hot. So it was actually, I think it was the best way to write a book. So I didn't have time for writer's block. Yeah. I didn't
keep going. Yeah. Jenny just sent the link to the book. And the cover is this beautiful night sky image, but it's, you know, in the foreground, it's got silhouettes of the swallows and it's beautiful. So we'll be sure to put the link to Isaiah's book in our show notes today. That's kind of one of the ways that I first got acquainted with you, Isaiah, before you even came onto the state parks as a park ranger. And before I knew that you were a Snorren Insiders ambassador, I was following your astrophotography just personally and was like, this guy is great. Look at all these stars, just showing off all the beautiful night sky scenes in Arizona. So that's pretty cool.
I also think that's is pretty cool. And it's totally acceptable to brag on the fact that you're a park ranger and you're doing this kind of thing, because it validates that our staff is so amazing in so many different ways. You know, I love it. I didn't know you wrote the book, man. I think that's freaking awesome.
I'm an author. Actually, no big deal.
Forgive me if you said that already, Isaiah, but that's how the acquiring editor found you, was through the Snorren Insiders Instagram, right?
That's right. Yep. That was the connection.
Perfect.
That's very cool.
It really was. Yeah, it was completely unexpected. And without Snorren Insiders, I wouldn't have done the book. I think that's just... I don't think it would have happened. So,
well, if that's not a testimonial, I don't know what is. So being an ambassador can lead you to some unexpected and exciting places. How does someone become an ambassador? Like, do you have to be insta famous, so to speak, or could the average person just get involved in this program? What's it required?
We don't have a minimum like number of required followers or anything like that. As Brooke likes to say, it's very grassroots for Snorren Insiders. And really, we have an application on our website and you just apply and we ask some simple questions. You know, do you already talk about responsible recreation? If not, would you be willing to? And we have a couple of commitments listed that folks can agree to. And those are listed on there to make sure that it's a good fit. And then we review the applications biannually. So the next review will be in August.
August. Okay, cool. We'll link to that application in the show notes as well. So people who are interested can check that application out. Okay, so rewinding. Brooke, take us back to the beginning where it all started. How did this program even get going? Where did the idea come from?
So there were a couple of us and we were having a brainstorming session over coffee, which coffee socially leads to a lot of really great ideas. So
all the best ideas
on board for that always. But so we had a couple of us, from CASCA and, the Forest Service and NFF, and, you know, we sat around a table and we've you know, formed friendships and things as well. So we were really able to have this open discussion about what can we do? How can we engage folks in a different and meaningful way? Because a lot of our messaging, you know, coming from a government or an organization, it doesn't always reach the right audiences or a wide span of audiences. So we're really looking for this peer-to-peer communication. And that has been wildly successful, but really it was just kind of a brainstorming session over coffee where we all just said, hey, we all really need a solution to this shared messaging, to be able to get, these ideas, this etiquette, these leave no trace principles. How do we communicate things across multiple jurisdictions, multiple organizations in a way that's meaningful to just the general public or even newer generations or folks that are coming into experiencing the outdoors for the first time? Because as you all know, COVID, we saw an increase in visitation outdoors, and it was a lot of folks who've never engaged with the outdoors before.
Oh, yeah.
Didn't know how, right? So it was like, how do we get to these audiences the fastest? And a lot of that is, you know, from their peers or from these social media influencers. With the rise of social media, the rise of the outdoors becoming popular, folks are going to these social media platforms looking for their next place to visit. So we're really looking on how we could engage them from, you know, the beginning before they get out there, so we can really communicate all those things we need to. So
you guys remember, like, going back in time to this, all this very sudden increase in visitation when COVID began, and it was like, okay, the dumpsters are overflowing, or please don't steal toilet paper or take your trash with you. And it was just like a very overwhelming influx and of first time visitors out into these parks that we have. So it was
right. And we found that most of these people, like, they're new people are going outside and they're experiencing the outdoors, and they didn't quite know how to do it as sustainably as possible, you know? So, and it's not that they didn't want to, they just didn't know. So that's another reason why the Insiders is a great group, is just helping get the word out there. And you started before that, right? So, I mean, you were there as a resource for people as COVID hit. So, I mean, that's really cool.
Yeah, we did. We did start before. And it was really just that, you know, piece that was, how do we get this peer-to-peer conversation happening? And then when COVID hit, we were so lucky that we already had that pilot year under our belt, because this did become extremely vital to being able to communicate those things to folks.
Yeah, I don't know about you guys, but when a government agency is talking to you about do's and don'ts, or even just an organization about do's and don'ts, it feels like a list of rules. Now, if I sit down and I talk with one of you guys over coffee, or I'm with Isaiah and he's teaching me about night sky photography, and he's like, oh, by the way, this is why we keep our lights low, because we're minimizing light pollution, because look at the amazing animals we're seeing here at night. I am not mad at Isaiah for telling me those things, you know, like, that's an explanation I can accept and handle and actually hear from him on, as opposed to a list of do's and don'ts. So this is a really cool approach, because I'm going to listen to a friend. I might approach an organization or an agency with some skepticism. So cool idea. Bravo, you guys, you did it.
Lyman Lake State Park is nestled comfortably amid the northern foothills of Arizona's cool White Mountains and encompasses the shoreline of a 1,500-acre reservoir perfect for boating, swimming, water sports, and fishing. The park features...
Oh, hey, Neil! Are you talking about Lyman Lake?
Oh, hey, Elizabeth. Yeah, I was actually in the middle of...
Did you tell him that the park has 56 campsites and 8 camping cabins?
Well, I was about to.
And did you know it's the only lake in this region of Arizona that doesn't have motor restrictions for boating? So people can, like, go skiing out there or take out their wave runners?
Yeah, I was going to tell them about that, too.
Oh, and did you already tell them that this area is, like, steeped in history, too?
No, but I'm sure you're going to.
Well, duh. I mean, there's several large pueblos located in the area, and petroglyphs are super common, and you can see them right from the park's trails.
Hold on. I don't have all day here, Elizabeth. Just go check out Lyman Lake State Park. Can you try not to walk in on my next commercial, please?
Oh, sorry. I got too excited about Lyman Lake.
So this began in late 2019, you said, Brooke. Since then, you know, what kind of participation have you seen? What's your ambassador involvement look like today? Do you have a lot of people involved or growing still?
Yeah. Oh, sorry. Go ahead, Jenny.
Go ahead, Brooke.
we've had folks that have been involved with us from the beginning that are still working really hard, and we've seen a lot of wonderful development and growth and things from folks, and we've had some newer folks come on as well. We just expanded over this last year. So that's been really, really exciting for us to be able to bring on new folks. But the activities that we do are just so much fun. We love building those relationships and just seeing everything that's coming out of this. It's been amazing. So, but we do always have interest. We did a couple tabling events and things like that at some of the breweries. So we do see regular growth. We would love to expand even more, and we're just trying to get a handle on it because it has been very natural growth and organic. And that's been great for us. And we're getting more partners involved. We're getting more ambassadors involved. So we're excited to see where this is headed for sure.
Yeah, I totally, totally agree with Brooke. And, you know, we've been doing things on the back end to fine tune and, you know, update those applications and get the website up to date and, you know, really have our communications in line and get everything squared away to, you know, have a good foundation for us to grow in the future. And we added 7 ambassadors in the past 6 months or so. So we have a total of 14 now.
Oh, now are you planning to cap that or just kind of let it go and see what happens?
I would like to say no, we won't cap it. But if we have 200 folks, we might have some capacity issues in managing because all the partner organizations, we collaboratively do everything behind the scenes. So, you know, it takes a lot, it takes a village. So
what is the requirement for an ambassador? Is there like a time commitment that they sign up for, like a year long commitment, or does it just not really have an end date? Do they keep going?
Yeah, we don't have an end date. And a lot of the requirements are asking, you know, for posting on social media, you know, so please, you know, post at least 2 posts a year about the program or post about responsible recreation. And we have our, you know, ethics, what's in our insiders stand for. And we ask folks to post, you know, based around those outdoor ethics, good stewardship, responsible recreation, and things like that. And also to attend the awesome events that we put on. So ask folks to attend at least 2 events a year.
Very cool. Yeah, as far as your ethics and your messaging, it looked like, you know, and this was before Isaiah was at the park, but I'm sure you remember it well, Isaiah. In 2020, we had the Bighorn fire down at in Tucson in the Catalina Mountains. And it seems like that's a really good example of one of the times that you activated your ambassadors to talk about stewardship and your ethics and responsible recreation, one of which is being really careful with fire during Arizona's dry seasons.
Yeah. And, you know, like you said, I wasn't around here at the park in 2020. I'm trying to remember, 2020 was just such a blur for everybody. And I remember I was living in Phoenix at the time, and we had the bushfire happening at the same time, burning over 4 peaks. So it was like an apocalypse. But
we also had that Magnum fire on the Kaibab at the same time. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that was in Flagstaff. I know one time I went back to the bushfire. I know this isn't directly related to the Bighorn fire, but a year after the bushfire, I went back to the burn area because they finally like opened it up, and I explored, and it was just really sad to see some of those saguaros. I mean, it's like a whole saguaro corpse. It's like brown from the base to the top. But one thing that was really amazing was, even though the whole body of the saguaro was dying, you could see a little patch of green on the top of the arms and on the top of the saguaro, and there was actually flowers. It was probably the last time those saguaros ever flowered. I have no idea what it looks like now. They've probably fallen over. But I remember I took some pictures and I posted about that a while ago. I think that was like a year or two ago. But you know, I probably wouldn't have gone over there for kind of a before and after without like thinking about, you know, messaging to my follower base and to anybody that was willing to listen. You know, this is the reality of fire in the desert, especially in the Sonoran Desert. You know, we can lose these really important and iconic species like the saguaro, just like that.
And, you know, Isaiah, I also went back and looked at the bushfire in some areas that we historically have hunted deer in, and just to kind of go back and see what the populations were like in those areas after the fire. And this says something for the resiliency of desert species. I mean, there were animals using those areas, maybe not as many as before, but there were were still in there carving out a life. So, I mean, I think it's pretty amazing what the desert and everything that lives there is capable of in recovering from these things. But I mean, in reality, I think these ecosystems were designed to have fire once in a while, just because it's a natural occurrence. So it's just built into the reparations are just kind of built into the DNA of the entire ecosystem. But yeah, I'm just agreeing with you. It's cool to see it come back, and it's amazing.
That's something we talking about messaging and, you know, thinking about how to get the word out and doing a wildfire awareness campaign, because the Sonoran Desert really struggles with fire. And like you were saying, Neil, there's different ecosystems that are really adapted to deal with it. And so that was a big push that we had, was, you know, letting folks know that really the Sonoran Desert struggles hard after fire and isn't really adapted. Like cacti, some of them we're seeing prickly pear and maybe some hedgehog if they weren't severely burned coming back. But things like Isaiah was saying with the saguaros, I mean, I think it's, Brooke, if, correct me if I'm wrong, I think it's 10 to 30% scorch and it can kill a saguaro. So it doesn't take much. But yeah, getting that messaging out and saying, hey, like, be even more careful to not let these things happen. Don't start fires, because this landscape will change forever and you'll never see it the same again.
It's not as pretty after a fire.
Definitely not. Okay. Aside from wildfire safety, what are some other ethics that you encourage your ambassadors to spread the word about?
Recreate responsibly, of course. So we talk about, you know, leave no trace, protecting riparian areas, pack it in, pack it out, all those kinds of principles. Being a good steward, which we separated those more so thinking with stewardship about history and cultural ecological significance of landscapes. And how to respect those landscapes when you visit, and, you know, not scribbling over petroglyphs and things like that, and avoid damaging sensitive areas like caves. That's been a big boom. And Brooks talked about that a lot. People are exploring caves, which is really dangerous, and really starting to become more popular on social media. So being really cautious like that, and cryptobiotic soil and things like that. Building an inclusive outdoors is another one. So we really want to provide experiences and education that add to building an outdoors that's inclusive and accessible and a safe space for everyone. And then we have respecting sovereign land. So we acknowledge and respect that landscapes have been and still are ancestral homeland, ceremonial grounds, and hunting and harvesting places for Indigenous folks and Native American tribes. So we want to respect that and keep that in mind while we're visiting.
You know, those, oh, sorry.
No, go ahead.
I was just going to say those cultural sites, you know, sometimes, you know, they're, people don't know they're there, and they find things there that they might want to take home with them, like arrowheads or pottery and stuff. And it really is best to leave that there. And I mean, you don't need to take it as a souvenir, but I think that, I don't know why it is. And we've put out a bunch of messaging about that over the years too. It's just, that's one that, it's kind of a hard point to get across.
Yeah, it really is. I think for some folks, it's like taking a piece of that with you, you know, and I mean, it's really cool. I mean, a lot of people have a really deep attachment to history, and then, you know, you want to keep a piece of where you visited with you. But yeah, it's really tough to say, hey, like, leave it be, yeah. Like, leave it for other folks. And I think there's a mentality too of, you know, well, if it doesn't get picked up, it's just going to get lost to time and buried in the sands. And, you know, I think that thinking too, but yeah, you're absolutely right, Neil. It's really hard to get that messaging out there. Another one that we talk about is using technology responsibly. So things like drone use, where you should and shouldn't be using drones, and also geotagging, which is a really deep conversation that I'm sure we could have a whole podcast, and maybe you guys already have.
Oh yeah. We could talk all day about that.
Yeah. And then last but not least, being safe outdoors. So I think that's a point that, you know, we don't talk about first aid, and, you know, and wilderness first aid and things like that. And what do you do and how do you be prepared? Yeah, those kinds of things.
The drones that you had mentioned as far as technology, especially with us entering wildfire season here, you know, a lot of people want to go to the parks and get their drone out to get really cool footage. And we get it. But what you may not know is that there's like a helipad right there. And there could be someone who is stranded that we have to rescue with a helicopter and land right there, or there's firefighting operations going on and we've got like aircraft that are doing active fire suppression and the drones interfere with that. So that's the reason it's not like to just be the fun killer. It's really about public safety.
Yeah. Also drones can start fires. So that's,
a good point. Yeah, that's true. And also, I want to throw in the wildlife harassment aspect of it. I mean, you know, everybody loves wildlife and drones are cool, but I think that the two just don't mix, because you could be really negatively affecting their life just by a low pass. I mean, it's just, you don't know what's going to happen after you fly it over there by the wildlife. It may not seem like harassment at the time, but the effects of it could be very negative to those wildlife species.
Yeah. The disturbing wildlife is another big one, because everyone wants to be a Disney princess also. And we see
by the way, Elizabeth, me here at the parks. I understand the urge to be a Disney princess.
I can identify too.
Yeah.
I would love for a bird to land on my finger while I sing a song. Are you kidding?
It's tough. And also, you know, especially in Arizona, I mean, we love our dogs. Folks love dogs. And that's another big one to dive into, you know, disturbing wildlife. And, you know, there's so many TikTok videos of dogs chasing wildlife and just, you know, and I learned not too long ago about the flea killer that's used on dogs and how that's getting into waterways and killing, you know, microbial life in waterways. So just so many things. Yeah.
Wow. I probably was contributing to that when I used to hunt ducks and my dog had the flea killer on him and he'd go in the river.
Hey, the more we learn, the better we can be, right? You also mentioned, Jenny, that people are really enjoying exploring caves and how that is. Obviously, Arizona has a history in mining like this. There are caves, but if you have that urge, I am going to do a shameless plug for Karchner Caverns in Benson, Arizona, Southern Arizona. If you want to go see a cave, go to Karchner Caverns. It is an incredible place. It is very well preserved and it's actively growing. So the humidity is so high that all of the formations are still growing from the mineral deposits. So if you want to see a cave, check it out.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. I mean, I'm going to plug around the cave too, because I spend a lot of time in the whetstones, and it's just an amazing mountain range and that's full of wildlife. And it's just, any hike on the trails outside of the park, you're gonna see coos deer and coatimundis. I've seen them back there so many times, and that's probably one of my favorite animals. They're just so much fun to watch. And just Karchner is more than a cave. It's just a whole outdoor experience. And I like to think of it as like a gateway to a Sky Island adventure in the Whetstones.
If you're a listener of the episode for any amount of time, you quickly learn that Neil is pretty obsessed with the Karchner area, the Whetstones, the Sky Islands. Yeah, it's a great area.
Saw a huge bear there last year and got to watch him for like half an hour. It was just outside the park, but it was a lot of fun to watch. I mean, there's just so much wildlife down there.
That's awesome. The pictures at Karchner of, you know, the original folks that were exploring it blow my mind. It's just, I mean, caving in general, but like the tight spaces and like once you get down there, there were no maps, but there were no established with rails. And yeah, it's just fascinating.
And they were so careful. They really came. Think of this, they were the ones that found it, because they came with a whole perspective of conserving this incredible natural resource. You can still see their original footprint tracks through the area that was muddy when they were exploring it. And that is the same pathway that our cave unit rangers take today, so that we're not creating new disturbances in the cave. It's just, so if you are a nerd for conservation, you're gonna love this area.
But we're just lucky that guys like that found it, you know, like people that were conservation minded, because it could have gone a totally different way.
Right. Getting back to the program and ambassadors, so they have some requirements and you're giving them some resources and giving them some direction on just the messages that they should be sharing. You mentioned that they get to do some experiences and your website, they're like VIP experiences. they sound really cool. I'm wondering if you can let us know what those are like.
Yeah, I can take that one. So we've tried to keep them unique. We've tried to keep them across broad topics. We've tried to keep them fun and inclusive. We've spent some time with other partners outside of the involved organizations. We've taken our insiders to Liberty Wildlife, and we did a whole behind the scenes tour and got to see the really interesting feather program that is operational out of Liberty Wildlife, where they provide ceremonial feathers and things like that to tribes all over the US. So that was really, really neat. We've done things like talks with our cultural resources folks. So our heritage folks have come out and brought artifacts, and we've, you know, hiked around. I believe we went to Shoe Fly, I think, for that one. So we hiked around, we got to see some artifacts and talk about, you know, why we leave things on the forest and, you know, where these things come from and their significance. So that was also a really neat experience. We've done kayaking on the Lower Salt to remove apple snail. So we do have events where we try to incorporate, you know, a volunteer activity and things like that. We've done talks with our fire guys about, you know, fire in the desert versus other ecosystems and how we manage those things when they happen. And we, you know, try to be proactive about it as well, which is why we did that event. So we got out some, you know, pre-fire messaging with that one. So we've done, you know, a couple happy hours here and there just for snacks and socializing and getting to know one another. We did get to tour a brewery one time and see how they work with local farmers and ranchers to incorporate seasonal crops and agriculture into beer flavors, which was amazing to see that.
Very cool.
Yeah. And they were also doing really neat things with water conservation as well as part of that process. So it was really great to see, you know, the breweries giving back as well as incorporating local communities into their product. But we've done a lot of different activities, and we've had an e-bike event planned at one point to kind of, we're trying to bring in these new types of recreation. We're trying to bring in the old types of recreation. We're trying to bring in the water conservation aspect. So we're really trying to cover everything in broad strokes and just get what information out we can by providing these, you know, behind the scenes VIP type experiences with our insiders. So
that's awesome. I'm just curious on the beer flavors, that's all.
Neil's got the important questions. What are the beer flavors?
I think when we went, they had one that I think was a blueberry maybe or some kind of berry, which was really cool. But they were talking about, I wanted to go back in the fall for the pumpkin flavored ones.
So. Oh yeah. Nice. Yeah. I will say something cool about this. So I moved to Phoenix a year ago, and I had lived in Arizona for over a decade, but I'm new to the Valley. And just, we can all acknowledge that making friends as an adult is kind of hard. And what I love about this is that you have built a community. So if you're someone who already is on board with these ideals, maybe this is something you can join to not only, you know, talk about causes that you're really passionate about, but also make friends. I mean, these adventures, these experiences that you put on, they sound like a lot of fun. And I also want to know more about the apple snails. I just learned about these recently. Can you, Brooke, tell me a little bit more? When you went to do this water project and you were removing this invasive species, what waterway were you in?
Yeah, so we were just on the Lower Salt, and it is an invasive species, and they do tend to be just right along the shoreline. And they are, if you've ever been out and seen things that look like pink bubble gum, that's the eggs. And so we, you know, spent a lot of time essentially just like getting those off of their little stations and crushing them or whatever with our kayak paddles. So it's basically attacking it at the source. So we didn't really do a whole lot with the actual snails. We were doing a lot of the egg removal, but it looks just like clumps of pink bubble gum. And we were just, you know, really trying to disperse those.
Bubble gum.
Yeah. It was
so
interesting.
So everybody looked. Yeah. So for bubble, if it's bubble gum, get it. If it's not, it's these eggs, get that too.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. I can look for that while I'm kayaking.
Yeah. And we try to do it in tandem with Arizona Game and Fish also does a lot of that. And they do a lot of recording what they're removing and things out there. So we did try to, you know, have some communication with them about when we were going out, where we were going out and how much we were really removing as well. So.
Yeah. And then you mentioned that you had a cultural resources experience, but I wasn't familiar with the place that you said it was at. And for me and maybe the listeners who want to know, where did you go and what was it to experience?
Absolutely. So we have two different ruin sites on the Tonto National Forest that you can go visit. And they do have interpretive trails surrounding them. So that's Shoofly Ruins and Sears K Ruins as well. So there's one out by Cave Creek and then one up by Payson area. And they're really neat. They're maintained interpretive trails with signage, so you can really learn about what you're looking at. And we also have a couple of partner groups, Friends of the Tonto, that do have trained archaeologists within their ranks. And they do help us with some of the more intensive maintenance that's needed for those things, but they're, you know, trained to do so. So, yeah.
That's awesome. And by the way, the interaction that we just had here now while we're talking, that is exactly what's going on online. So this is why your ambassadors are so important, because if someone sees a picture, they just like I go, hey, where is that? And how can I go visit it? And so instead of just leaving it there, you're saying, and then here are the other things to think about when you go. So
Sears Key is a really convenient and cool place for people in the Phoenix metro area to go check out, because it's not too far. It's scenic. I mean, there was a fire that went through there a while back, but it's still an awesome area out there.
Yeah. And they both have, you know, parking and things. So they're accessible, which is great. So it's a really nice way to experience the ruins and really experience what you're looking at as well. And we do try to also incorporate our insiders into these events as well. Isaiah actually did lead a stargazing event for us as well that I forgot to mention. I think that one's really important. So, you know, we do try to include the insiders in these events when we plan them and make sure that their interests are also communicated out to the group as well.
Very cool. Isaiah, yeah. What was that like? What did you do and show people during that experience?
Yeah, it was amazing. So we did that in August of last year, and it was kind of a two-part trip. It was part stargazing, and then we also camped out, which was nice.
Cool.
And yeah, so it was up on the Mogollon Rim, and we all met up. We all met up at this campground. I'm trying to remember the name of the campground. I think it's by the trailhead for Horton Creek. And I'm having a hard time remembering the name of that campground, but we met there and there was a good sized group of us. I think there was like 12 people. And from there, we all caravaned up to the top of the Mogollon Rim. And there's a beautiful handicap accessible trail right on the edge of the Mogollon Rim, like overlooking Payson and just the Tonto National Forest. And we went up there like half an hour after sunset and got to take a walk for about a mile down the path. And as we were walking, you know, the sun was continuing to set. And I remember we were really worried that we weren't going to be able to stargaze because there was some clouds that had rolled in. But then after the sunset, they just cleared out and then the Milky Way started shining through, and I led a constellation tour and just showed people some different constellations and like taught about different astronomy facts. So we got to learn a bit about the Milky Way and, you know, how far away the core is and those kinds of things, and got to answer some questions as well. So we just had a nice time up on the rim, out of the heat, you know, under a dark sky. And then after that, we all, you know, some people went back to Phoenix and some of us went back to camp and just spent the night out in the forest. It was really wonderful.
Isaiah has one of the best planetarium guide voices.
Yeah, that sounds like a perfect tour.
And something else that we saw were glowworms, which I had never seen before.
Oh, yeah.
They
oh,
were I so would hear cool.
More about that.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was really cool. Yeah, that I had never seen anything bioluminescent ever before. So that was just so cool to see. They were just crawling on the path. And we're like, what are those things? I thought it was just like reflection from our lights, from like somebody's reflective stuff from maybe their clothes, but it was these cute little inchworms. It was adorable.
Who would have known? I'm up on the road plenty and I have never seen that. That's so cool. I'm going to have to keep my eye out.
Mm-hmm.
Huh. Wow. Okay. Well, so that's some, you know, a little flavor of what you guys have done in the past. What's coming up later on this year? What do you have planned?
Yeah, we are working on a kayaking trip in July. And then one that we're really excited about is coming up on August 5th. We, thanks to one of our partners, Discover Gila County, we were able to connect with the San Carlos Apache tribe. And we'll be visiting the San Carlos Tribal Hall. And they're going to talk to us about responsible recreation and tourism on tribal lands. So open to have folks that aren't ambassadors come to that and learn more and check it out and learn from San Carlos Apache and get a chance to talk with them. We're really excited about that one.
Sounds like a really cool event people can go to if they're kind of maybe on the fence about becoming an insider, you know, so they can come check it out, see what you guys do, talk to everybody, and then maybe go from there.
Yeah, absolutely. And we'll be sure to send you guys the RSVP. So if anyone wants to come, make sure to fill out that RSVP and we'll send you more information.
Perfect. We'll include that link in our show notes. Gosh, that's so exciting. You've got some fun things coming up. I just think it's great, though, that you are activating people who already care and you're giving them a place and you're giving them supportive information to share this message of responsible recreation and appreciating beautiful Arizona, because it is gorgeous. And if we all do our little part, we can really keep it beautiful.
Yeah.
So thanks for putting that together, guys. That's awesome.
Yeah. And just want to shout out to all of our partners, Central Arizona Conservation Alliance, the National Forest Foundation, Tonto National Forest, Wild Arizona, and Discover Gila County. And if you're interested in becoming a partner, we're happy to have you too.
Fantastic. Yeah. Thanks for this information, you guys. Jenny, Brooke, and Isaiah, thank you for the work that you're doing. And thanks for joining us on the show today. We appreciate your time.
Of course. Thank you, Elizabeth. And if I could say one thing before we end, you brought up a good point earlier about how this is a good way to make friends. Because when I moved to Phoenix in 2019, I didn't really have a lot of friends because not a lot of people live in Phoenix that I knew. And one of the reasons I joined the Insiders was so I can meet people and I can make friends. And so, awesome. Yeah, I would say if there's anybody that's like thinking about this, it's a really fun community. Everybody is just very friendly and kind and like-minded. And it's amazing. So I'm really grateful for that aspect of Sonoran Insiders as well. It's a community and there's friendship there and we all need friends. So
yeah, we do. Sold, Isaiah. I'm glad you said it. Awesome. Well, thank you guys again so much. And thanks for the work that you're doing with the Sonoran Insiders. Keep it up.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having us.
Thank you. This was really fun.